Please take your seats. The performance is about to begin. Welcome to Seats on the Aisle, a podcast produced by Theatre Lawrence. I'm your host, Executive Director Jamie Ulmer. This is Season 1, Episode 6 for our production of I Hate Hamlet. In Act 2, we visit with Brandon Stevens and Jim Toucher, who play Andrew Rowley and John Barrymore in the show. We talk about their characters and their past theater experiences. But first, let's bring up the lights on Act 1. In I Hate Hamlet, Andrew Rowley is a television actor whose series was recently canceled. His agent lands him what many would consider the role of a lifetime, playing the lead in Shakespeare in the Park's production of Hamlet. The problem? Andrew hates Hamlet. On top of that, his real estate agent has sold him not the modern apartment he was hoping for, but a Gothic retreat once owned by the famous actor John Barrymore, complete with Barrymore's ghost. What follows is a comedy that explores what we do for fame and facing our fears of achieving our dreams. As fantastical as the premise of this show seems, playwright Paul Rudnick was actually inspired by true events when he crafted this show that debuted on Broadway in 1991. Rudnick was apartment hunting in 1987 when he saw a real estate listing describing a medieval duplex. It turned out the apartment had once belonged to famous actor John Barrymore, who had elaborately renovated it in the early 1900s into a space he dubbed the Alchemist's Corner. There were still traces of that renovation, including a small cottage on the roof of the building. Rudnick took the apartment and began researching Barrymore. When he mentioned the location to his agent, an older German woman, she said perhaps he would find her hairpins. It turned out that 30 years prior, she had had an affair with Barrymore's son-in-law in that very apartment. Inspired by his research on Barrymore and the apartment, Rudnick started to create a novel. But he soon realized that all the scenes took place in one location, so he turned it into a play instead. The play's run on Broadway became infamous. The actor playing Barrymore, who had a reputation of being problematic, was difficult throughout the entire rehearsal process. Then, during a performance, he broke fight choreography and poked the actor playing Andrew in the backside during the sword fight that ends Act 1. That was the last straw, and the actor playing Andrew walked off the stage and immediately quit the show. His understudy would finish the performance. Let's hope that doesn't happen during our run. I'm directing the production, and this is actually the second time I've directed this show. The first time I directed it, it was in 2003. It's been interesting for me to revisit this script 20 years on, as both my directing style has, let's say, matured, and working in a different venue with a new cast. This is also the second time that Theatre Lawrence has produced the show. The last time was in 1994. Act 1 runs approximately 55 minutes, and Act 2 runs approximately 50 minutes. There is a 15-minute intermission. I Hate Hamlet is appropriate for most audiences and would be considered a PG movie. The specialty drinks for this show are Barrymore's Bubbly, which is basically a mimosa, a To Be or Not To Be, which is a non-alcoholic version of a Pimm's Cup created by our friends at Nostalgia Room. Fun fact, Barrymore's favorite drink was a Pimm's Cup. Then you can order an En Garde, which is Z's Divine Espresso with a shot of your choice of alcohol. And finally, our popular alcoholic milkshake is going by the name of An Anytime Snack. You'll understand that reference when you see the show. Remember, you can now pre-order your intermission drinks at the bar before the show. Now, let's dive into Act 2. Jim, Brandon, thank you both so much for joining us on today's podcast.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right. Let's dive right into this, gentlemen. First, let's talk about who each of you play in the show. Brandon, why don't you go first?
I play Andrew Rowley, the actor who is going to play Hamlet.
And a little bit about him.
About Brandon or
we'll ask about Brandon later. We don't care about Brandon right now, but we care about Andrew. Tell us about Andrew.
So Andrew is a film actor, television actor, with his like wildly successful kind of like Grey's Anatomy kind of style show. And that has been canceled, and so his next venture is on Broadway, where he is going to be playing Hamlet in the role of Hamlet. And he's excited at first, but then the further along he goes, he's starting to wonder, what have I gotten myself into?
Except he's not on Broadway. He's in Central
That's
Park.
Right. He is not on Broadway. He didn't even make it to Broadway.
He doesn't
yet.
Get to perform indoors.
Yeah, indoors. Yeah. That's right.
Which is a great transition into Jim. Jim, talk about who you play.
I am playing the ghost of John Barrymore, who was once upon a time a very famous actor, well known for his many, many movies that he did, also well known for being a lush and womanizer, and was well known for having been the greatest American Hamlet of all time.
Right. Yeah. Well, and he was also part of this huge acting legacy that continues today, because
right.
he's actually Drew Barrymore's great grandfather or something like that.
Never looked it up.
Yeah, but yeah, he's a grandfather of some sort to Drew Barrymore. So it's like, yeah. So the show has Hamlet in the title. Does that mean that audiences need to know about Shakespeare or care about Shakespeare? or should they be afraid of the language of the piece? You know, just kind of talk to us about that.
Well, they don't need to be afraid of the language. And it helps if you're at least, peripherally familiar with Shakespeare. There are plenty of references to Hamlet, of course, and occasionally to other works. But it's not necessary that one go out and study Shakespeare to come and see the show.
Yeah, because like the language in our show, I Hate Hamlet, some of the Shakespearean words are defined, you know. Andrew is confused about what certain words
mean.
There's
a whole sequence.
So it's he kind of represents the everyday audience member, I think. In that regard.
And you know, while the show is about, you know, him trying to play Hamlet, there's so much more that goes on in the show.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say Barrymore's language is Shakespearean. It's a little affected by, I don't know if that's the right word. He has his own language, I guess.
He speaks in a more refined manner. But the things that he says, even in that refined manner, though, are sometimes, like you said, he's a bit of a womanizer.
Yes.
He had a reputation.
Yes. Well, and we, you know, you and I joke every once in a while about words, because some of them are like, what in the world is he saying?
Well, let's talk a little bit about each of you. What other Theodore Lawrence projects might people have seen you guys in?
The last one that the only one, was the previous production of Dead Man's Cell Phone, where I did not play the dead man. My role was Dwight, but that was my first one, so this would be my second.
Number two, Jim, I know you've done more than one.
More than one. most recently, I played John Brown in a show called The Ballad of Blackjack.
Mm-hmm.
I've also been in Music Man as part of the quartet. Was in Camelot as King Pellinore, was in Bridges of Madison County, Matilda, had several parts in that, and was Senator Dirksen in the Are You Now or Have You Ever Been with Darren Kennedy.
Yeah, so what have been some memorable performances for both of you? And it doesn't have to be here, you know, especially, you know, since Brandon, you've only had one. So.
Yeah, hard pressed to find.
But you know, any roles or performances or things that you guys have done that really stick out in your mind as performers?
Probably my favorite has been to play Don Quixote in Man of La Mancha many years ago. Also was Leadville Johnny Brown in The Unsinkable Molly Brown, and played Curly in Oklahoma. Had over the years played King Arthur and one of my favorites was to get to play Caiaphas in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, as you're talking right now, I'm like, oh, I can hear that.
gentlemen, yes. Yeah. Yeah, how does it feel to be the one responsible for crucifying Jesus? You know? So those are probably the most memorable ones.
Yeah. Well, but those are pretty substantial and memorable parts. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been fortunate.
Yeah, yeah. Brady, what about you?
It's been a while since I had done theater before Dead Man. So it was back in 2015, but I did The Children's Hour, which was really interesting. It was my first time like reading that play.
Yeah.
Barefoot in the Park was a really fun role.
Oh, yeah.
I also was the puppeteer for a production of Little Shop of Horrors. So I was inside the plant. So no one saw my face, but it was a lot of fun moving around.
I heard that was people's favorite performance of yours.
Well, you know, I don't mean to brag, but...
people may have seen you elsewhere, though.
They may have seen some of my commercials, which that is probably, like, that's what I'm most memorable for other people.
Uh-huh.
A lot of As Seen on TV stuff.
Yeah.
There's a certain basket commercial that people will spot me and more or less laugh at my involvement in it. But it's funny. It's fun. But yeah, quite a few commercials out there.
Yeah. Yeah. It is kind of funny that, you know, you do that. And then there's a running joke in the show about a commercial that the character that you play is in.
Yeah.
That it's kind of like follows him around this commercial.
Oh yeah. I did not have to dig deep for that.
Yeah. So what got both of you into acting? Besides, like all of us actors, you know, the deep-seated need for someone to look at you and clap.
Oh, that was gonna be my answer.
No. Yeah.
I had no clue. In ninth grade, which was, you know, that was ninth grade, when junior high school, not freshman year, but the director of the ninth grade play came to me and said, "Would you play the lead?" And hopefully none of my classmates are listening, because I'm sure the only reason she asked me because she thought I was the one smart enough to remember all of the lines. But I fell in love with it, because I was a really shy kid, and it just gave me the opportunity to come out of my shell a little bit and experience more of my extroverted side on stage. And so that was kind of the beginning. And then I mostly do musicals. So I did the musicals in high school and college, and just kept doing it.
Yeah, what's besides the singing, is there a real noticeable difference between performing in a play versus a musical?
That's an interesting question, and let me think about that. Yeah. I'll
let Brandon answer. You ponder that.
Yeah.
You know, I said I might spring some unexpected questions on you.
Sure.
So yeah, Brandon. What about you?
So I started in high school. I was a part of the forensics team, not forensic science that some people think.
Speech and drama. CSI.
Yeah. Some people are still confused by that.
Yeah.
And it was fun. I really enjoyed performing, but I felt like something was missing. I was like, I don't know what it is yet. And then it wasn't until my senior year, I was like, I'll audition for Guys and Dolls and see what happens. And when I walked on stage with all the lights and the costuming, and that was like, oh, that's what's missing. Like, all the tech, all the costuming, the audience, you know, stuff like that. And just telling stories, I guess, living through like different lives and stuff like that is super interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah, Jim. As I pivot back, do you have an answer to that?
Well, so my initial thought is that with music, there is, I think it's a little easier to connect emotionally.
Mm.
Music has that emotional aspect to it that just words by themselves don't always have, and so I think that's for me probably the biggest thing is that. I have, you know, I have to work a little harder to get the emotional impact that I, cause, and that's a big part of why I really like doing theater, because it helps me to explore my own emotions as well as what other people are thinking and feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, John Barrymore, as we talked earlier, you know, was a real person. Mm-hmm. So did knowing the fact that Barrymore was a real person, did that change your approach to developing this character at all?
Well, we talked about that early on, and you didn't say anything more about it, so I decided no.
Yeah.
Because I'm not really playing John Barrymore. I'm playing John Barrymore's ghost.
Yes. Yes.
And so it's Paul Rudnick's, like, did death change the man at all? And so I'm trusting Paul Rudnick. And his words and his interpretation of all of that. So, with any character, it's important for me that one of the first things I have to try to do is find the voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty easy with John Barrymore's ghost. And then I just, as I was thinking about some of that, it's like, well, I guess if John Barrymore doesn't like what I'm doing, he can send me his ghost.
That's right. Differently. Exactly. So. After 10, when the rates are down, he can make a call.
That's an inside joke, by the way. Yeah.
When you come to see the show, you'll get it. So, Brandon, your character isn't based on a real person, but how much of Brandon is there in Andrew?
Quite a bit. Yeah. Quite a bit. I always try to do something drastically different than who I am, but this is a role where it's like, okay, so a lot of me is going to come through this, just same shared experiences, along with the whole, like, imposter syndrome kind of feeling.
Oh,
kind of like, I feel like Andrew feels that for sure. Like, oh, I'm just a TV actor, and now I'm like, oh, I can't do this. You know, who do I think I am? Direct quote. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that, too, channeling into this role with a little bit of a magnifying glass on it. He's a little more expressive, and his panic attacks are a little more pronounced.
Yeah. Than mine. Well, and I imagine his warm-up routine to get into characters is a little bit more elaborate than what you do.
Oh, no, it's exactly what I do.
Oh, okay.
That's a glimpse into my preparation.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, that answers a lot of questions
that I've had.
So we're recording this interview about a week before opening night, and don't let that strike fear and terror in both of you. What are each of you most looking forward to during the run of the show?
I am looking forward to having somebody else besides Jamie laugh. all of the comedy. I love Jamie's laugh, always when you get to this point, it's like, let us have an audience.
Yes.
So please do come and see the show. It's going to be great fun.
Definitely the laughs, the whole reactions. When we get into tech, all of the tech elements too is going to just add a lot of dynamic energy into it.
So,
I think I'm just ready to get this thing going.
The lights, the special effects, all of the sounds. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I can tell that your performances, both of you and the whole cast, has been enhanced just a little bit, just as more and more of the set has shown up, and the furniture and all those props and everything. Mm-hmm. That. But I think the big turnaround, you know, was the other day when the fireplace showed up on the set.
Yeah.
Oh,
everyone
yeah.
actually kind of was like, oh, look at that.
A mantle.
Yes.
And performances kind of kicked it up a notch to Max.
Right.
You know, don't let the scenery out.
And when the swords came out.
Yes. Once we got the fight. And that's one of the great things that about this show is that there's so much variety in it. You know, we've got sword fights. We've got cheap dick jokes, you know.
Tights.
Yes, we've got making out on stage.
Some dancing, some sweet tender moments. There's
some tender moments, and there's some wonderful sincere delivery and discussion of theater and Shakespeare. But then we turn it right around and do a bada bing bada boom Hollywood joke there. So I think I'm excited. To hear audiences react to the show too. That's always my biggest barometer of a show is that opening night audience.
Yeah. because I think the show is just, I saw somewhere it's described as a farce. And most times I think people think, oh, it's a farce, British comedy, it's just going to be fast from start to finish, which this is going to be pretty fast.
Yes.
But it's going to be like kind of a lighter mood kind of feel. It's all going to be like lifted spirits. This has more tender moments too, kind of woven in there. Yeah, so there's going to be a nice and tempo breaks.
Yeah. And Barrymore, I think he has, there's some real depth to his character too. He's not just he's not a, well, I can't think of the right word.
But yeah, he's not a two-dimensional stereotype.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and both of your characters really do go through this transformation. That's that's a credit to the writing of the play, that you are definitely different people at the end of this show than you are at the beginning of the show, which does not always happen with characters. So.
Yeah.
As we are wrapping up here, is there anything else that either of you would like to share before we send you on your way to rehearsal?
I'm trying to think. Purchase your tickets, please. Purchase ahead early. Get those seats locked in and just prepare to have fun. You know, like, don't worry about Shakespeare. Don't stress about it. There's no test.
Yeah. At the end of it. It's not high school.
It's not high school. So, it's all good.
Yeah, for me, the other great part of doing a show is getting to meet new people, and these are great cast folks. I mean, they're immensely talented as well as just a lot of fun to be around, and so the rest of the cast, they're super. So.
Yeah, yeah, and Natalie is keeping you all in line. Natalie, the stage manager.
Natalie.
She's,
well,
you
know.
All right, well, gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. This is your 10-minute call to places, please. Ten minutes.
Thank you. Yeah.
And now for the curtain call. I Hate Hamlet runs 2 weeks, April 19th through the 21st, and the 25th through the 28th. The box office is open weekdays 11:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. and 1 hour prior to performances. This show is made possible thanks to our associate co-producer, First State Bank and Trust, and our performance sponsor, Broadband Legal Strategies. Coming up next on the Theatre Lawrence stage in June is our final show of the season, Fiddler on the Roof. I'm Jamie Ulmer, and thank you for taking a seat on the aisle with us.